Like, it's actually interesting. Snoozing is like procrastination. And I can imagine, like, this is like literally the first thing you do after you wake up, you procrastinate.
Yeah.
How can that be a good thing?
Doesn't seem right. Hello, I'm Michael.
I'm Radek.
And this is the podcast.
A sounding board for interesting ideas and insights. We discuss books we read and want to share with you.
As well as technology and productivity, which is what we do by day working on our app, Nosby.
Or, you know, whatever else comes to mind.
So what is coming to our mind this time?
I got back to my morning routine.
All right, morning routines. Okay, we're back there. All right.
Yeah.
I heard you had some, you know, some achievements there, like waking up so early that like nobody can believe, right?
Yeah, that's true. So for the 12th day in a row now, I woke up very early at 8 a.m. straight. Don't laugh at me.
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, very early.
Early is relative.
Yeah, I know. I mean, again, this is a good thing about our no office and our work. I mean, you know, you don't have to go to an office, so it's not like you have to wake up at 6 a.m. To hit the morning traffic and, you know, the tube or traffic jams or all these kind of things. You can wake up whenever we want. And actually, it's pretty early for you guys because the development team has the Scrum meeting at 10 a.m., so like 2 hours before.
Oh, yeah, I very often start work at 10 a.m., so yeah. So wait, what time do you tend to wake up at?
Okay, I used to, you know, do that in different times, different depending on my life. Now it's exactly 6:55, so it's actually just before 7 a.m., because...
That's surprisingly reasonable.
Yeah, because it's exactly, I mean, because my girls, they go to school at 8:45, so 8:45, they have to be at school. So we have to leave at 8:30. And the idea is this, I have my morning routine, which I do, which we discussed already in previous episodes, which is very successful now as well. And what I do is from 6:55 until 7:35, I do my morning routine. I have my time to write my journal, to pray, to wait myself, to go to the toilet and all these things. I have this, you know, half an hour, more actually 40 minutes just for myself in the morning. So I can really like plan my day, you know, think about my day. I would call it wake up consciously, right? You know, and then I go, which is my favorite part of the morning routine. I go to the bedroom of my girls and wake them up, and they are sleepy and they are nice and they are beautiful. So I wake them up, and then, you know, we prepare breakfast and we get ready for school, and at 8:30 we leave, and 8:45 they're at school, at 9 I start my work.
Okay, that sounds pretty reasonable, actually. I thought you would be waking up at like 6 or 5 or whatever.
Yeah, I would do that because there was a time I was doing that. But my wife is a night owl, and she likes to... And you know, the thing is that, you know, when you have kids and when you manage to put them to sleep 9-ish, like in the evening, then, you know, if I would have to go to sleep right then to just be able to wake up very early in the morning. So, because you still need, like, you know, at least 7 hours of sleep, you know. So what we do is, you know, from 9-ish to midnight, we have time for ourselves, like for me and my wife. So, you know, we can talk, we can discuss things, we can watch our favorite series, maybe even a movie, you know. I mean, and then around midnight, usually a little bit after midnight, we go to sleep. So I physically cannot wake up earlier because otherwise I would not be really in my best shape. And, you know, to be productive, you have to really sleep. I mean, really, you have to give rest to your brain. So so I have my evening routine around midnight, which I like, do a little bit of journaling, and then I just go to sleep directly. Mm-hmm. And then at 7, I have to wake up. So like everything else, I mean, I used to wake up even at 5 at some point, but it was always costing, you know, the evening with my wife. And I like evening with my wife, so... That's the thing.
Yeah, so actually you hit an important point. You were laughing at my 8 a.m. being like amazing. But first of all, the point isn't that it's 8 a.m. It's that I've woke up at 8 a.m. straight every time, no exceptions, no snoozing. And the consistency is what made a big difference for me. Because I would rarely actually wake up at, you know, 9 or something. Sometimes I would, but I would often set the alarm clock at 8 or 8:20, but then, you know, snooze and then just like feeling, you know, I would get up feeling really tired. And the consistency helps. And second of all, like, this is exactly what you're saying. The idea of waking up earlier is actually quite quite interesting to me. I would like to do that, but the problem isn't the time I wake up, it's the time I go to sleep, because I require exactly 8 hours of sleep every day, and I'm not going to budge on that. It's like, mm-hmm, 8 hours of sleep every night, that's required. And if I'm going to, you know, wake up at 6, I would have to go to sleep at 10 p.m. and that's also unacceptable to me. It's just like, that's not going to happen. So, mm-hmm, 8 a.m. is like the best compromise I can have. But I'm just like, it's stupid, right? It's relative, like 8 a.m., who cares? But I'm just really, you know, for me, to wake up for almost 2 weeks straight without any serious problems, you know, at 8 a.m. straight, that's, you know, that was challenging. I could not achieve that before. It's hard for me, right? So I'm proud of myself.
No, I'm proud of you too. It's like, you know, when you said that, you know, I'm waking up early in the morning at 8, like, really? So, but you're right. And that's the thing. I mean, very often people don't appreciate the 8 hours or 7 hours of sleep that they need. I mean, I'm saying 7 hours because usually it is for me 7 hours, because usually we are, you know, pulling this thing, you know, of watching like yet another episode of our favorite show, and I go after midnight and I wake up at 7. So it's usually 7 hours, but then I sleep longer on the weekends. I don't require, and sometimes I nap, so I like make up with a nap in the middle of the day.
Cannot nap. I don't know how people do that. It just doesn't work for me.
You know, when I nap, I rarely really fall asleep, like 100%, but surprisingly, it really, you know, gives me the rest I need. It's surprising how it works. But recently I started being better at this. I think you go with practice, that, you know, that after several naps, suddenly you start falling asleep. You know, it just starts working. So it does for me. Like several times already, I was really, you know, sleeping. I mean, it's only 20 minutes, so it's not like a long nap.
Right.
Because that's the idea. I mean, you know, I don't want to be, you know, grudgy and, you know, and really annoyed when I wake up after that. So it's a short one, but it brings me back, you know, to life. But yeah, but still, you know, 7 hours is the minimum. You know, if I sleep short than 7 hours, it's like there's 6 hours or 5 hours, oof, I really can feel that. So so it's really important, and that's why it's not good if you're going to be, you know, if you're going to be going to sleep at midnight and waking up at 5 or 6. I mean, then, yeah. I mean, at some point your body will just not allow it.
Right. It's like, yeah, we all want to have more hours in the day, but you can, right? You have to sleep. It's sorry, this interesting thing in the internet. There's some research about this, you know, people sleeping for 5 or 6 hours a night, every night, and they are chronically sleep deprived, but they would say they're fine, right? They, like, a lot of people who are sleep deprived, you know, chronically, it's not a thing that happens, but a thing they do all the time. They delude themselves into thinking this is normal when it's not. And it seems that, you know, that's just from, I haven't looked that deep into it, but it seems like there is a small percentage of people who really do require just 6 hours or so of sleep, and that's fine. But most people who say they sleep 6 hours a night and they're fine, they're not. They think they're fine, but they're not. And they don't have 2 hours more of day every day. It's like they don't get any of the benefit because they can't reach their intellectual performance.
Yeah, I mean, they're underperforming and they're like almost drugged. I mean, like if they don't sleep that long, I mean, long enough. And the thing is that we think that sleep is a rest for our body, but it's more a rest for our brain. You know, like, right. like our brain is making all these connections, you know, when we are sleeping. And if we don't get it, if we don't give it enough time to actually grow these connections and, you know, and learn from the day that just went by, then we, like, it's not good.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's like you have to, it's like number one priority. You have to, like, protect it. You have to really protect your sleep. Unless you're Elon Musk, then, you know, whatever.
Yeah, then you have side projects like launching, you know, space rockets.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, lately he's been tweeting a lot about Tesla, and then there was the, you know, the fifth successful landing. This happened. And then after that day, he was like, oh, you know, yesterday there was a bit of a distraction. I was like, yeah. Right, a distraction, right? I wish my Monday night distractions were like that. Well, but anyway, morning routine.
All right, so you're waking up without the alarm clock now.
Without the alarm clock?
You said without snoozing, what you meant.
Without snoozing, right.
All right.
Yeah, it's like, we talked about it, but it's so important. I noticed this a long time. It's just, it's difficult to actually do it, which is that if I start my day right, productively, you know, with the right approach, with the right set of state of the mind. If I wake up and immediately just get up, you know, turn off the alarm clock, eat, and then like get to work, I'm like, I started my day in this productive mood, in this action kind of frame of mind. You know, I'm doing. And not always, but most of the time, if I start the day like that, the day is so much more productive because I don't spend the first 2 or 3 hours of the day feeling all, you know, drowsy and then like still sleepy and feeling like, you know, whatever. No, it's like those 2 or 3 first hours of the day are like my most productive time and far more productive than the night I can be, you know, after lunch. So it's like important. That's what I'm doing. That's why I care about this, right? Because it, like in the end, it doesn't matter, like you said, it doesn't matter which time exactly I wake up, right? In theory, but in practice, it does because of this weird quirk of the brain. If I'm consistent, if there's this routine, this ritual that I start the day with action, with productivity, and I just get up, and you know, don't start. Like, it's actually interesting. Snoozing is like procrastination. And I can imagine, like, this is like literally the first thing you do after you wake up, you procrastinate.
Yeah.
How can that be a good thing?
Doesn't seem right.
Right. But it's hard. It's so hard for me. Like, I tried for a long time, right? And it was one of the goals this year to like get better at this, like really get better at this. But before now, I couldn't. And I had other things on my mind. You know, I was working on my diet and my weight and you know, doing my training and whatever. And that, there was a lot of progress with that. But now I could like focus on that, tried a few things, like really, you know, said to myself, I'm doing it. And so far it works. And I'm just hoping, you know, I won't jinx it by talking about it. And I can actually... you know, make it into a new thing, a habit that's sustained.
Yeah, I mean, that's why for me, it was a big win when I nailed my morning routine also this year. I mean, we talked about it in the previous show.
Yes.
And now I think you can, I mean, with, you know, your lucky streak, you can appreciate, you know, for me, what it is. I can tell you, literally, for months, my morning routine was wake up before 8, rush to wake up my kids, rush to prepare things, rush them to the school, be late at school most of the times, and like just imagine starting a day like this. You know, you're rushing, yeah. You're being late, you're being, you know, you're shouting at your kids because but you're to blame because you were not the one to wake up earlier. And now right. The moment I changed it, you know, to wake up at 7 and have my morning routine, you know, have time to read, have time to write a journal, have time to pray, to do my things, as you said, prepare a day consciously, prepare a day with a plan, prepare a day with, you know, proactivity in mind. And then I can just, you know, I can just like be totally relaxed and just go, you know, to wake up slowly my kids. And like, it's a totally different dynamic. And I'm not shouting at them. I'm not, you know, rushing, and we are never late anymore. Like, this is like this change to just wake up with a plan, wake up with a routine. Like, for me, it was also a like big change and a fantastic improvement.
Right. So I just wanted to mention this one concept that I found like interesting and relevant to this. So I started reading this book, which I think you mentioned on the show, called 5 a.m. Miracle.
Yeah.
By Jeff Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, the book itself isn't that important, but actually it is kind of relevant, because what the book is about is like, this guy is all about waking up at 5 a.m. and starting your day by, you know, like dominating your day before breakfast.
Yeah.
Like, I have no intention of actually doing a 5 a.m. thing, but it's kind of, you know, it's kind of relevant. Like, there is some like inspiration or motivation to like do the right habits, like even if 5 a.m. is 8 a.m. for me. But like, there was this one thing, one phrase, one reminder of an important idea that I found worth sharing. So the book reminded me of the fact that we cling towards comfort,
mm-hmm.
right? And thus we become prisoners of the comfortable life. You know what I mean? Like, the comfort holds us back. We, to grow, so much of the time, maybe all of the time, we have to step out of the boundaries in which we are comfortable. We have to get out of our comfort zone and do something that's uncomfortable, you know? Waking up early is not comfortable.
Not really. Right?
I remember when I started doing public speaking or traveling more, like, all of that was uncomfortable. A lot of the things which are now fine for me were really uncomfortable, right?
Yeah.
And if I got stuck at that point, that, well, I like comfort. Comfort is nice. You know, have a nice life. You know, don't stretch yourself too far. It's nice in the short term, right? But then if you don't stretch yourself and do the uncomfortable thing, it will always be uncomfortable, and you will never do it, and you will never grow, and you'll be stuck with the thing that's the default, right? And so, like, the book made this, like, it's obvious, but it's so important, right? We have to reject this notion that we choose the things that are comfortable, right? Because the thing is, with time, the discomfort muscle strengthens, and the things that used to be uncomfortable no longer are, right? I for me now, to like, if I were to, you know, fly to San Francisco and do public speaking next week, you know, there would be a pain in the butt, but uncomfortable, like on an emotion level, no. Like, I'd be fine with that, because I've done it enough times that I no longer have a problem with that. It became comfortable, but only because I trained. I did the things which were way out of my comfort zone, right? And so, like, we must become comfortable with discomfort, with being uncomfortable, with doing the things that are uncomfortable, right?
No, the thing is that comfort is, as you said, comfort is deceiving. Because it's comforting, but then on the other hand, as you said, it slows you down, and it makes you vulnerable, actually, you know, it's the thing that, you know, you get in shape, and that's great, but just like you lost weight, but now if you don't pay attention, you know, I mean, it's easier right now for you to pay attention because you're already, you know, on the correct weight. But as we discussed, right, if you don't pay attention, you can gain back the thing, and it won't be nice anymore. But on the other hand, this is, once you've achieved that, you can achieve more. So, like for me, with Nosby, the problem at some point was, and I remember that moment, was that, like, I already achieved everything I wanted, You know, I have everything I need. I mean, I'm earning more money than I thought I would be earning. I mean, you know, I never had high hopes of being like a multi-billionaire. So like, if I was earning more than I thought I was, you know, I was supposed to earn, I was already great. And the same with my family. You know, I have family. Now I have a third child just born. So I have three kids. You know, we have a nice house. We have a nice living, you know, and everything is nice. Everything is good. So I've already achieved more than I thought I would, right?
Right.
But we keep challenging ourselves. You, me, you know, we as a team, we keep challenging ourselves. We keep pushing more, and we don't do it because we want more, like more money. We want more fame. More. No, we do it because it's exciting, because it makes us, you know, step out of the comfort zone again. You know, it makes us strive to be even better and see the limits, you know, see how, you know, good we can become. But we have to provoke this. I mean, what I say is that we have to consciously choose to do it. You know, it's no longer the thing that, you know, when you have nothing, you know, when you have nothing, you're being pushed to be out of your comfort zone because nothing is comfortable, right? But right. But if you're comfortable, you have to be seeking, you know, ways to get out of your comfort zone. You have to be, you know, actually you have to be your own enemy. You have to be pushing yourself out of the comfort zone in order to see what's on the other side.
Well, but that's interesting when you said that, oh, you know, you already achieved so much, because people would get stuck so much earlier, right? And it's kind of this like, that's why this is an important, like, fundamental skill and value and something to remind yourself of over and over again. Because it's not like, oh, I stepped out of my comfort zone, I learned this, I did that, I'm now cool with that, right? And now I'm good. No, because you'll go with that for a while and you'll hit another wall, another barrier. And you again have to, like, stretch yourself and do the things which are scary,
mm-hmm.
so that you can grow and like break through this natural ceiling which you've made for yourself, right? It's also interesting what you said about being your own enemy. I remember that was interesting in Your Brain at Work, a link to the book. It was great. It talked about how you know, status, the feeling of status brings fear and anger in people, in relationships with people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because when you challenge someone else, right, it like for a lot of people, it's like you're challenging their status, right? And, mm-hmm. and they get angry, right? And you may try to like improve yourself, but you make people fear for their, like on a very kind of primal level, you make them fear, right? And so like it's like interesting how you can like kind of short circuit this weird thing in our brains when you think of yourself as the enemy, when you play against yourself, when the enemy, when the thing to beat is your past self, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're comparing yourself against your past self and you're working to be constantly better and better, but it's not like, oh, I'm now better than you, right?
No.
And so mm-hmm. it makes people super uncomfortable, and it's like it gets people all nasty. Like, no, like you're constantly playing against yourself. You are the enemy, and it's like, and that's like all, you know, a win-win for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, I remember this feeling on my last triathlon. So, for example, for me, you know, I'm right now completing triathlons, which is like mind blowing for me that I can actually do it. But but because I'm already comfortable with, you know, with triathlons, with the distance, you know, I can do them. They're fine, and I'm not the crazy guy who just wants to right now, you know, compete for the Ironman right now or whatnot, or, you know, I mean, it's not like sports has become my new, you know, passion in the way that I want to be, I don't know, the champion of the world, which is ridiculous because I'm almost 40 and there's no way I'm going to be a champion in the world. But some people are just overexcited about it. But I had this thing that, you know, on my last triathlon, I was running, like the last part of triathlon is running. I was running. It was good. I was good, you know, and I just wanted to get to the, you know, to the finish line, right? And I was feeling that after my good bike ride, I would even get a good, really reasonably good time. And I there are four laps of, 2.5 kilometers, 10 kilometers total to run. So I planned that the first lap, I'm going to just be comfortable running just to see if everything is fine and the my muscles are working fine. And then I'm going to start, pushing and tracing. But I didn't do that. The second lap, I also did comfortably. Third lap, did comfortably. And on only the fourth lap, I was like, whoa, I'm too comfortable here. I know I'm going to get to the finish line. So with that knowledge, after so many triathlons, it's no longer a question if I get to the finish line. So why am I running like it's over, So I started running really fast on the last, last lap, and I did a very good lap at the end. But then I was really annoyed at myself that I just didn't push myself, I was comfortable. I was comfortable getting to the finish line without actually, and I was like, this is not like a catwalk. This is a race, In a race, you race, right. You should be fast. So I was like, yeah. Next triathlon, I'm going to push myself more. I'm going to, and not just because I want to beat some time or whatever. No, just because I know I will get to the finish line. There is no question about it anymore. The question is if I can stretch it, if I can push it more, if I can be faster, and if I can see, and again, as I said, I have to be my own enemy. I have to be competing against myself. I'm not competing against anyone there, I don't care about other people's results. I care about my result. So that's the thing, I was too comfortable.
But like that's exactly why I'm starting my day early. Like you remember this notion of a frog, right? It's like when you have a task which is like important, but it's like really
eat that frog
uncomfortable. Like it's hard and it's like difficult to like. Like it's uncomfortable, right? You'd prefer to like, lazily wake up, have a snooze, then just lazily, have your breakfast, browse through Twitter for half an hour or more, get to work at 10, and then start with catching up on Slack, catching up on Nosby comments, starting with some simple tasks, but then you get stuck in this frame of mind that, yeah, okay, I'll now just be more comfortable for the rest of the day. It's fine. And you don't achieve anything that day. Nothing of real value, right?
Yeah.
But then you start with the uncomfortable, at least what feels uncomfortable at the beginning, right? You wake up, there's no snoozing, you do your breakfast, you don't rush, but you don't do the Twitter, which is comfortable and cool, no.
No.
You read a book or finish early and get to work earlier, which getting to work at 9 is early for me. And you don't start with the easy stuff. You don't start with catching up. You start with the frog, with the most important task, with the thing that really pushes you away from it because it's like, I don't want to do it, but you have to. And so you start with that. You start with the uncomfortable. And then when you get, when you get over with it, then you can be comfortable and once you're tired, you can work on the easier stuff. But like, it's like we have to push ourselves on to the uncomfortable. And I feel like this is exactly what you're saying if you're racing. You have to start with the uncomfortable because if you start with the comfortable, you're lying to yourself. Oh, next lap, I'll do the actual race. And then, oh, it's the next lap. Or, yeah, oh, it's my last, TV show episode that day. And then I'll do some, be productive for a while. And then you watch another one, because it's uncomfortable and nice, right? So, yeah, it's such a trap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why we should be really, we should be really fighting with that. And as you said, as we said here, we have to naturally become our own enemies. We have to be challenging ourselves, and only then it makes sense. And only then, life makes more sense. You're actually living. My favorite quote, from all time. It's a cliche quote, but I love it. Is the one from Braveheart. That when he Mr. Wallace is going to, to go there to visit the King of Scotland or something, and then his friend is saying, it's a trap, you might die. And then he says, every man dies, but not every man really lives, and then and it is cliche, but it's, I love it, I love it.
It's so interesting how, you know, we talk a lot about systems, you know, habits, like how we structure our world so that we can achieve the things which are hard. You know, how we didn't just push ourselves to read more books, even though it was so hard and we couldn't. Now we changed the approach and we got on audiobooks, right? And then it worked. And so, like another example here, you can invent, you know, you can come up with ways to make it easier to be uncomfortable, right? So I wanted to give one example when you talked about racing and sports. What I've been doing for a while is I've been going on runs with my brother-in-law, right? Mm-hmm. And like he's a much better runner than I am, and it's much easier for me to run long distances with him than alone, because when I'm alone, I'll, you know, run for a while until my kind of natural ceiling, and then it's like, oh, I'm done, you know. I'll run more another time, right? It's like it's I get to the level where it's uncomfortable enough that I just give up, right? Or maybe I try for a while more, but then it's like, okay, just screw this. But then when I run with my brother-in-law, like, he's a much better runner, so he just runs. It's fine for him, you know, and it's fine for him for longer than it is for me. And so I run, because there's like this, like, I can't just stop, right? I'm running with someone. And so I will stop only when I reach my actual kind of physical limits where, okay, like more would like really kill me. But I don't stop myself too early. When I can do more, it's just uncomfortable. I push through the discomfort barrier because I'm with someone. There's commitment, there's the pressure to keep running.
Yeah, this is how I started running, you know, 4 years ago, I think. When I was running myself, I was fine. But then I started running with a person who was a lot better than me, and he's still my running buddy. We mentioned that already. But it was the thing that he started pushing me because, you know, he was better and I wanted to run with him. And then, and because I was running with him, as I said, I couldn't just, you know, just stop. I mean, I had to, you know, keep him company. So as long as I, you know, wouldn't die, I would just keep running with him. And you know, he was reasonable enough to first, you know, run with me 6 kilometers that I could run, then you know, then 8 kilometers, and then 10, and then, you know, we started really running, and then sometimes we even push ourselves to run, you know, 15 kilometers or something. But the thing, he pushed me, and we, you know, we push ourselves, and it makes perfect sense, you know. And with triathlons, I am doing triathlons with a friend who's 60. You know, 60. Wow. He's 23 years older than me. And I've never, ever won with him any kind of sports on the triathlon. So even like last triathlon, I did a very good bike ride. He was 1 minute faster. It's the same with running. He was 30 seconds faster on running. And he's 60. So for me, you know, the moment I can actually beat him at something, you know, would be really great. And on the other hand, he's pushing because he knows he's 60. He knows he will not be a lot faster. So he's really trying to, you know, to stay in shape, so that I cannot beat him. You know, so it's a fun. I mean, we motivate each other, and it's fantastic, the dynamic, and we love this. You know, and again, we are out of our comfort zone, and it's great.
Yeah, and to loop back to the morning routine, like one idea, and it's something I did. Like if you have someone, you know, at home, who wakes up at the same time you do. Then you can kind of alternate breakfast duty.
Ah, that's a good idea.
You know what I mean? And that's exactly what I did, right? And so then it's no longer, oh, I decided to wake up at 8 a.m. I have to wake up at 8 a.m. because I have to do breakfast. Mm-hmm. And it's not just for me. It's for the other person too, right?
They depend on you.
And then it Right. And then, you know, you can alternate it if you want, or just like take the whole responsibility for yourself. And like that's one of these little things, right? Only a fool keeps doing the same thing over and over, expecting different results. But there's always things like that you can do, like this little idea, like, oh, maybe I'll just, you know, wake up at the same time and make breakfast. And then it's a commitment and you have to do it. And it's not that hard to push yourself, because you're not just stretching like what feels nice, but you're pushing against the like what we have hard coded in our brains. Like that there's social pressure. You made a promise. You're not going to break your promise, right? Are you a liar? Like, of course not. You'll wake up and make the breakfast.
Right.
And that makes it so much easier to actually, you know, wake up early. Because it's a commitment, right? And there's always, like, with habits, with things that are hard, there's always things like that. Things you can do, things you can change, you know, approaches you can take that make hard things a little bit easier. And I just keep talking about it because it's, like, it's so important. You know, we shouldn't just think of ourselves as, you know, if I can't do it, I'm a failure. It's, like, you know... Things are hard. Habits are hard. You know, our lizard brains can be stupid and work against us and make things which we, you know, deeply want unnecessarily hard. But you can always like work around it, and you can always, you know, not just push yourself even though it hurts. You know, yeah, discomfort. You should pursue that, but still create an environment in which the hard things are just a bit easier.
Yeah, but the thing is that, you know, unless something really bad happens, we are going to have quite a long life. So we should play for the long term, you know. And as you said, things are hard now. I mean, you know, waking up for you at 8 o'clock is hard now, but in the long term, it will pay off. It will, you know, make you more productive. It will make you feel better. It will, you know, change the way, you know, your day goes and your days in the future will go. So it will enable you to be a better person, right? So. And that's the thing. As a society, we are too much conditioned on the quick wins, you know, on the quick, you know, thing, on the short term. And we shouldn't be, you know. This is a long-term game we're playing, you know. And that's why, as a long-term game, we should, you know, invest in these short-term inconveniences to be able to have a better life in the long term, in the long run. So, yeah. That's the thing. And as you said, I really like what you said about the, you know, tricking yourself, you know, tricking or forcing yourself because somebody, you made a commitment to somebody, you know, these kind of tricks help you help you motivate yourself to push through. But in the long term, you will have developed a habit that will just work for you.
Yeah. And with time, it will become easier.
It will be very easy.
And then the second nature. And then I won't need motivation. I won't need a commitment. I won't need a brain hack to do it. It will just become a thing I do.
I mean, in the last episode, we mentioned my quarterly offsite. So like this quarterly offsite, the idea from Essentialism that I did. And what Greg was saying, the author of the book, he was saying that you have to review your journal. So, and he's journaling. And so he's reviewing his journal. And I was like, it's hard for me to review my journal if there is nothing there, you know? And one of the parts of my morning routine were to write a journal. And the best part was that now that I'm writing a journal every day, like I really have something to review and I'm reviewing it. And it gives me lots of thoughts, lots of ideas that I didn't have before because they would escape, but I would just write them down on this day. So now really, when I do a quarterly offsite, I have 3 months of journaling to review, and it's good. It's really fantastic, and it's good to be able to go back to these memories.
Yeah, and I just want to really stress what you said a few moments ago about the investment part, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just, you know, a thing you do because whatever. It's like think of the compounding effects of habits like that. Mm-hmm. You know, think, you know, if, you know, when you're doing your weekly review or your personal quarterly offsite or your whatever, or when you, when you wake up earlier, and like, what if it makes your week, you know, 10% better? What if it makes your quarter and next quarter, you know, 10 or 20% better? What if, you know, 20% of the time waking up earlier and starting the day in the right mindset will make you twice as productive as you otherwise would be? And like, how much more you can accomplish, and how much of that you'll be able to kind of reinvest in more better habits, or in better work, or in better whatever. And like, it's not just like, you have to notice that it's not just X percent better. It compounds, right? It's like, you invest and then it pays off your whole life, and it pays off in the fact that you can have like more space, more time, more energy to focus on other things, and other, you know, investments in habits and processes and or whatever, you know. Like, that's amazing. Like, the long-term impact of things like that is like really easy to underappreciate.
Yeah, I mean, you know, going back to first morning routine, which is what you mentioned, or going back to you losing weight, I mean, this is something that enables you to do a lot more, to be a lot more, to do something, you know, you wouldn't be able to do because of your weight or because of you sleeping so long. Like all these things are enablers for, as I said, to compound, yes, to have a great effect, you know, in the future.
Right, and especially that, you know, when you're talking about my weight, it's like I was not like in like, you know, any danger area at all, but still, you know, I was at some points at most of my adult life, you know, on the closer side to being overweight, and at some point overweight, and it literally makes you live less.
Yeah,
like literally, you know, being overweight has so many kind of cascading effects on your health.
Oh yes.
And eventually, you know, your at least average time, you know, lifespan. Mm-hmm. So it's serious, you know. It's not just a stupid thing we talk about on this show. It's a serious real thing with effects that when it works, when it actually becomes a habit, becomes a thing you do, becomes a real change in your life, it's something that will pay it off for decades.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. That's why we should be doing that.
Be less comfortable.
Be less comfortable, yeah. Be comfortable with uncomfortable.